Welcome, everybody, to the latest episode of the Union Federation podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network and the BQN Networks. This is, of course, the podcast that covers everything that is happening in Star Trek and the Orville. And right now it's an exciting time because I have demoted everybody in the podcast because it's time to return to the Lower Decks. Lower Decks Season 4 is here and upon us, which means that I've got to have a top-notch crew of low-class ensigns. No admirals, no captains for this podcast, but I've got some great ones. And we never demote her because she is the top-notch holographic captain and ship's counselor, the wonderful Miss Amy Nelson.
Well, hello there. Don't mind me. I'm just over here ranking which captains are best looking.
Oh, you know, but there's a lot of good-looking captains out there. But you know what, too? I need an ensign that's going to create some havoc, but still give us an education during the podcast. And I can't think of anybody better than one of my favorite people, Miss Haley Stoddard.
How dare you demote me? I didn't deserve this.
You bring it on yourself every single time. What do I tell you about that button?
I know, but I love that button. But how dare you demote me?
Kevin Reitzel is out on special assignment, which means that when he gets back, he gets the job of pea corner cleanup. So, you know,
fair.
I think that is very fair. But we are here, as always, to talk about everything Star Trek and the Orville. But right now, the talk is Lower Decks Season 4 is here, guys. I am excited. Lower Decks has been so much fun. And we even got a little bit of taste of Lower Decks in our live action Star Trek in between, because we had, of course, the crossover with Strange New Worlds, which was actually one of the fun episodes of Strange New Worlds. But I bring up Strange New Worlds too because, Haley, you were not able to join us on our episode that covered the finale of Strange New Worlds, and I know you didn't get to watch it for a few days later, and I just wanted to give you a chance to give us your thoughts on the season finale of Strange New Worlds.
Okay, so really good. I really, really enjoyed it. Edge of my seat. Also, this ranks like second for me as far as cliffhangers go with Best of Both Worlds. Like, this is going to be a long wait, y'all. And I know we got longer than like a summer like we did between the Best of Both Worlds, but part one and two, I am so intrigued as to what's going to happen. The Gorn, I really appreciate it. I'm super intrigued as to how they're going to maybe tie this in into the universe and everything. And it was fantastic. It was so well done. So well done. I need to go back and rewatch it again because I haven't watched it for a little bit.
Well, when I watched it, I immediately thought of you because you are also our oracle around here of late. And you called it, Scotty.
I know. Oh my gosh. I was so excited. I was like, it's going to be Scotty. It's going to be Scotty. And it was Scotty. And oh my God, I'm so stoked. I'm so stoked.
It's going to be great. Yes, while we have a long wait, and really we have no idea when the next season of Strange New Worlds is going to be coming at this point, we are excited. I will probably watch that episode many a time between now and whenever we get an announcement that Strange New Worlds is coming back. Come on, guys, get your act together. Let's get things moving here, and let's get that announcement. Let's get everybody back to work. But luckily, we do have some Trek to fill in because, as I said, Lower Decks is back, which means that we are going to be doing a lot of spoilers because Lower Decks dropped its first two episodes. So, spoiler alert: we have the first two episodes of Lower Decks. If you have not watched them yet, get on your Paramount Plus. Give them a watch. They're a lot of fun. Come back, join us again, because we're going to have some fun talking about these two episodes. So with that, guys, the only thing I got to say is let's warp into some away missions. Okay, guys, Away Mission 1 is our first episode of Season 4, Tuvix. Miss Nelson, are you capable of giving us an Admiral's Log synopsis for this episode?
Yes. So Ensign Boimler learns that he is due to be promoted while the Cerritos is escorting the decommissioned starship Voyager to Earth to become a museum displaying exhibits about its chaotic adventures in the Delta Quadrant. When a dormant Delta Quadrant macrovirus is awakened, Boimler's distraction allows it to combine with Borg technology, contaminate the other exhibits, and take control of the ship. After encouraging words from Ensign Mariner, Boimler enlists Ensign Rutherford's aid to disable the ship's systems with a sample of homemade cheese that once infected Voyager. Meanwhile, back on the Cerritos, a stray Delta Quadrant flower petal causes a transporter accident that merges Dr. Ta'ana and Chief Engineer Billups into a single person, Tillips. Captain Freeman learns that when this happened on Voyager, Captain Janeway killed the merged person Tuvix to bring back the original two individuals. Not wanting to suffer the same fate, Tillips begins Tuvixing other members of the Cerritos crew. Ensign Tendi and Talin end up merging all the Tuvixed individuals into a huge ball of flesh before separating them out again. Once the chaos is over, Boimler, Tendi, Talin, and Mariner all receive promotions to Lieutenant Junior Grade.
Okay, guys, the only thing I have to say is, oh my God, we're going to do something on Voyager? You know, because, I mean, Boimler's going to flip.
Because I'm not excited. That's all for Boimler. Yeah.
Yes, it's all about Boimler. First of all, it is fun because we got Voyager on Lower Decks, and you know, Voyager, we've got, it's been kind of a renaissance of Voyager through Star Trek animation, obviously everything that happened with Prodigy and Janeway there. But what I loved about this episode was, one, they made Voyager look good in animation, but two, to see how other people in Starfleet view Voyager, and like Voyager, this ship of just mass chaos and everything. But guys, we're gonna have a little conversation about the episode. Amy, what were your initial reactions to this episode of Lower Decks?
While not being as familiar with Voyager, I really feel like I missed a lot of the references. There were some people that I just didn't recognize. So it fell a little flat for me. And then plus also the jarring nature and humor that Lower Decks brings, I wasn't prepared, I guess, to be thrown in so quickly. And remember, like when it first came out, it took me like 4 episodes to get in to the style of Lower Decks. I'm having that jarring sensation this season. And I just wonder if it's because Picard and Strange New Worlds was so amazing live action that this just has hit me like a Mack truck. And I'm like, oh, do I like this? I do. I laughed a lot, but I'm still having that effect that it's like hitting me in the face.
I think it's the energy of the show. And let me, you bring up a point, Amy, and I want to ask both of you guys this on the thought process. Because we got Boimler and Mariner in live action on Strange New Worlds, which is a little bit of a different flavor, did that have any effect of you guys kind of getting back into Lower Decks, Amy?
I thought it would, but this episode was just so
chaotic.
Yeah. Yeah. There were a lot, and even with both episodes, like there's a lot of stories going on. You know, there's just a lot. There's like 3 stories in each of these episodes, you know, plot A, B, and C.
Now, Haley, as I was watching this episode, one of the things I thought of is, oh, now we know why Geordi became the head curator for everything.
Yeah. When that guy came on screen, I was like, okay, what's so secret? Why would this be like so uber secret? And I love this idea of like ship museums and like being able to go on and like experience things or see things. But do we really want it that much integrated that clearly chaos ensues in a museum. Probably not. This is very much like Night at the Museum, the movies, where everything comes alive at the end, at the end after everybody's left and it's dark and stuff. Only this is like could happen all the time. It just seems like a really bad idea, which, to be fair, fits with what Lower Decks is kind of all about, right? Like Lower Decks is chaos wrapped in, sorry, I'm creating this analogy on the fly. Chaos wrapped in like a Christmas present. And the crew has to like unwrap the present. Like someone breaks the tape and the chaos falls out of the Christmas present. And then the crew has to put the Christmas present back in and rewrap it. And look at like, you know, when kids and they're like, oh yeah, I'm gonna sneak open this little present. And then they have to try to rewrap it, make it look like they didn't unwrap their Christmas present the night before, you know, being able to actually open them the next morning. On the fly. Sorry. That's kind of how this feels. Is like, why would you put all this stuff like and make it so it could actually happen in a museum rather than just like, hey, here's stuff that happened. And if people love Voyager as much, pretty sure they know all the stuff that's happened on Voyager. And like Amy said, it was a lot.
It definitely was kind of this tidal wave of right back into Lower Decks. They didn't ease us in this season. They threw us right in the deep end, right out of the gate. But guys, speaking of bad ideas on Lower Decks, yeah, this was not a good idea.
I'm only glad it wasn't like real.
Yeah. I like the idea of the fact that they kept making two Vexes but then you have this, and I'm just like, they even have a fun little moment where she's like, yeah, no, it's just a big blob of flesh at this point. I don't care about the essence that applies here. But you know, this is how Lower Decks is going to solve a problem. We're gonna make it much worse before we make it better. Amy. One of the things, too, you talked about it was there's a lot of Voyager references throughout this episode. And I'm like you. Voyager is the one Star Trek series I've never actually watched from start to finish. So there's some stuff I didn't catch in there as well. But I really felt like they were having a lot of fun with Voyager. And I think they did a very good job of, in Lower Decks' own style, paying tribute to Voyager.
Yeah, so the things that I didn't quite get, and don't at me, I'm sorry. But there was one other character.
Oh, the clown?
They sort of had a mask or something?
Yeah, it's a clown.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a... Okay. Now, thank you. And I didn't... It took me on my second watch that Janeway's lover, I was like, who's this guy? And why is he being all romantic with Mariner? And then it finally hit me. And then I didn't understand the cheese reference.
That was, and I'm really bad with episode titles. Neelix makes a cheese. And I can't remember exactly. So yeah, don't at me either. There was something about the cheese. And it was an accident, and it caused obviously some chaos on Voyager. Oh, okay. It was something about like he made the cheese because Neelix comes aboard and he's like trying to like grow stuff so that they're not having to use like the replicators, which is eating their energy, which they need to get home. Okay. And I've only watched through Voyager once. I'm so proud of myself. I've watched through all of it. So yay. And something about cheese. I can't remember if it was like an accident that they grew this cheese and it caused problems on the ship.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's what it was. Yeah.
But yeah, there were some definite deep cuts.
Yeah. Guys, all I know is I'm scared of the fact that the Borg can assimilate macroviruses. That's kind of scary.
Because they're not, I mean, they're not solid. So yeah. That's what gets me too. Mm. Like they are like a form of life, but at the same time, they don't have a solid state necessarily.
Right.
Yeah.
But we had one other interesting development in this episode, because promotions were handed out. Our lower decks are no longer ensigns. They're junior grade lieutenants, but they're the lowest of the lowest officers. So, yeah. You know, I love how they had to find a way to justify why they're still lower decks.
Yep.
I'm glad, though. I think that was probably, honestly, my favorite part, was that after four seasons and, you know, how many missions and how many things that they, yes, screwed up, but then turned around and fixed or helped fix. And I don't know in time, like how many years have passed or months, I'm guessing. I don't know where we are is like, is this months or years at this point? That they finally did get promotions. Like, I think it makes sense, you know, like this has a finite amount of seasons. And so it makes sense that these people, yes, they're still technically lower decks, but that they should be promoted. Like, why wouldn't they be?
Well, and I think that's a good point. I think that shows one of the things that I noticed, and we'll talk about it even more in the next episode, is character growth in these first two episodes. It really, especially with Boimler and Mariner, you're really starting to see them show some character growth. And just remember too, guys, but before I should have said at the top, we don't talk about that thing with Pike. You know, we were not supposed to talk about that. So, but guys, I have some trivia for this episode as well. So I'm going to transport us into some Star Trek trivia. Yes, we have trivia abound for this episode. And I found some interesting things Voyager related, including a little bit of history of Voyager after Voyager ended, because in the novels, after returning to the Alpha Quadrant, the USS Voyager is put into dry dock for over a year in order to have Borg technology and the technology from the future removed, as well as undergoing a major refit to bring the ship up to current standards. Afterwards, Voyager is relaunched with Chakotay being promoted to captain and being placed in command. Tom Paris is promoted to lieutenant commander and is the executive officer. And Harry Kim is promoted to lieutenant and made new tactical officer and chief of security. So we can rest. Harry did get a promotion. Voyager goes on to play a pivotal role in the Borg invasion of 2381. It is one of the few ships to survive the Battle of Azuri Nebula. Later that year, Voyager is fitted with Starfleet's new quantum slipstream drive. Prior to this, after Voyager's return in 2377, a new class of starship has been designed, the Vesta class, as a testbed for the quantum slipstream technology Voyager brought from the Delta Quadrant. After testing proved successful, Voyager was fitted with a slipstream drive and made the flagship for Project First Full Circle, which involved Voyager along with several Vestra class and Marian class, successor to the Miranda class starships, returning to the Delta Quadrant to further explore it. It is to further explore, establish contact with the different races. Voyager encountered and to explore Borg space now, and the collective had been destroyed. Now that the collective had been destroyed. So Voyager definitely had a future after the series was over. And that is good to see. But
so I have a question. Like, if Chakotay took Voyager out, then why in Lower Decks is this a ship that is going into a museum? Usually, I mean, and look at our historical, like when we go visit NASA or the Air and Space Museum in DC, like those ships years ago, that's now in a museum, like Voyager is still active. I mean, Prodigy, right?
Yeah.
So how is it that this Voyager is the one that's going to go in the museum?
I think it could be one of those short-lived, we're putting this ship in museum, and then they realized, oh, wait, it's the one most fitted for the technology that it brought back. We need to use this ship again.
But, maybe, I mean, Chakotay took it out.
Maybe it's like the A, and so it's Voyager A. So it's like TOS, where it's still like the original ship, but it's the A or the refit. So maybe... Maybe that's how they're thinking it. I don't know.
That timeline is a little mushy between Lower Decks, you know.
Yeah, because Lower Decks is in between TNG and Voyager.
Yeah.
So it's like in... So, yeah. So, Yeah.
Okay. We won't think too hard about that.
No, we might strain something. We don't want to do that.
Yeah.
I've got a couple other interesting pieces of trivia. The macro virus returns after surviving 8 years behind a panel after its first appearance in Voyager Macrochism. It was last seen in Voyager Shattered. This thing's just ugly, slimy, messy, not fun. And the fact that it survived 8 years behind a panel. Yeah. No, don't want any part of this.
Okay, so I missed. So that's actually from Voyager. I just thought this was a strange thing. That's from Voyager.
Okay. It comes aboard and it's like tiny. And then I can't remember exactly how it happens, but it gets like ginormous. And so it's a macrovirus. It becomes like,
Okay. All right. Well, those are the two episodes I need to watch.
Well, and there might be a third because Rutherford mentions how Voyager's bioneural gel packs were affected by Neelix's Brill Cheese 10 years ago in the Voyager episode Learning Curve. Rutherford was able to use this method to disable Voyager. And of course, as we talked about at the very beginning of the episode, Mariner mentions that Pike thing that they aren't supposed to talk about to Boimler, of course, referring to the events of those old scientists from Strange New Worlds. So that kind of wraps up our coverage of episode one of season four. Do either of you ladies have some final thoughts about episode one?
Aside from the fact that I'm always going to have subtitles on.
They talk fast.
They talk so fast.
Yeah.
I can't keep up.
I really like, again, the pairings like Tendi and Talin. I'm glad to have Talin back. And that she showed up on the first episode to launch season four. So I am hoping that she will, you know, get in. I mean, obviously not as much as the others, but I really like her and was glad to see her.
No, I'm excited. Yes, it didn't ease us in, but that's Lower Decks way.
Yeah.
But they were sneaky because not only did they give us one episode, no, they dropped two episodes on there. So let's warp into Away Mission 2. Talk about the second episode that came out. Okay, guys, this might be the cue to start Star Trek thing ever, which turned into the Pokemon from Hell. But yes,
he's so cute.
Okay, Moopsie or Murph? If you could only choose one.
Oh, I'm going with Moopsie.
Yeah, Moopsie. Sorry,
gonna suck your bones.
I have no bones yet. I must flee. Come on, it says Moopsie, so cute.
Moopsie. Moopsie.
Yes, Haley, you did it. Exactly.
So, Miss Nelson, can you care to give us the next edition of the Admiral's Log?
Absolutely. So, Mariner thinks she overhears Ransom saying that she will inevitably be demoted to ensign again and resolves to act insubordinate to speed up the process. On a routine mission to rescue humans from an alien menagerie, Mariner's behavior is irreverent and undisciplined. When a dangerous creature, Moopsie, escapes from its cage, Ransom accuses Mariner of releasing it in order to get demoted. He tells her he has faith she will succeed as a lieutenant and will not let her sabotage her own career. The two collaborate to return Moopsie to its cage and discover that the humans in the menagerie freed Moopsie in order to kill the curator and take over the menagerie themselves. Meanwhile, Rutherford is anxious that Tendi's promotion will ruin their friendship. He spends the day trying to impress Billups with his engineering skill in order to earn his own promotion, only to be outdone at every turn by the new Ensign Livik. Tendi eventually assures him that they will remain friends no matter what. That's an order. Learning that Rutherford has turned down promotions for heroic achievements in the past, Tendi simply asks Billups to give him the promotion he is due, which Billups immediately grants and flicks it through the air.
Rutherford! Okay, guys, so we had our second episode. Haley, I'm going to start with you. What were your first thoughts on this episode?
I liked this one actually a little bit better. The pace was a lot slower, and I enjoyed the story. We get this menagerie again, so immediately I'm back in, like, the cage, and what's the other episode where there was a menagerie. Oh, I'm so bad.
I can only think of the Orville one.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that one?
That's right. Yep.
So, okay. I'm going to pause you for a second there because talk about wishing for ultimate crossovers. What if it would have been Ed and Kelly, if they could have crossed over?
Oh, that would have been awesome.
My gosh, that would have been hilarious.
Although, can you not imagine that these characters might have been based on that simply yes. because they wanted to take over yes. the menagerie? So
I was really getting the Orville with that. So yeah.
Yeah. And I liked this notion, you know, of Mariner's fear of being promoted, like why she's got this deep-rooted fear. So I think the themes in this episode were definitely a lot better. Poor Boimler, clearly not realizing he could turn the dimmers on the windows so that, you know, the light from the nacelles wasn't killing him in his quarters. I mean, you know, dude, come on. So I enjoyed this one a lot better than I did the first episode.
Okay, quick question for you guys. Which would be worse, having the nacelle room where you don't know to turn down the dimmer on the window, or being stuck between having the room between two holodecks, especially considering on what goes on in the one holodeck?
No. I would rather take the nacelle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will wear eye patches and walk around blind, but no,
yeah.
we are not doing anything holodeck. We know what happens on the holodeck.
Yeah. Yeah. What happens on the holodeck should stay on the holodeck unless it's time for holodeck waste cleanup.
Yeah.
I don't want that. That might be worse than the peak cleaning the pee corner. I'm mm-hmm. just saying.
I think so.
What about you, Amy? What were your first thoughts on this episode?
You know, I completely agree with Haley. I enjoyed this episode much better. And probably because of the themes. But again, there was a lot going on. You've got Boimler trying to find his room, Mariner and Ransom, which I absolutely love, that power dynamic in your career. And, you know, you don't want to fail, so you are going to fail on purpose. Like, I have seen that so much as a teacher. You know, kids don't want to be successful in math. And then you have the Rutherford engineering. So there's a lot of stories going on here, but yet the pacing, it was better. And maybe just because it wasn't as jarring because I'd already seen the first episode. So I'm getting in the flavor of Lower Decks.
For me, I enjoyed this episode so much more than the first one. And there's a lot of reasons why I like this one. Obviously, I need a pet Moopsie that I can just put in a cage and, you know,
Moopsie.
I need a replicator. I'll need a replicator for that too. I can just replicate teeth over and over.
Because only so yeah.
I can knock out Ransom's teeth. But what I loved about this episode too, guys, was I loved especially the character development of between Mariner and Ransom in this episode, mm-hmm. and just seeing something that is becoming going to look like be one of the plot threads through this season is Mariner maturing and Mariner realizing that it's okay for her to start advancing. She's always kind of sabotaged herself and she doesn't want the responsibility, but she seems like she's kind of a trick. And having somebody like Ransom who's not going to put up with her act and actually realizing what she's doing is great. And I just love the dynamic between these two. And I love the back there, and there's a great shot of Moopsie just trying to get through the door. He just wants cuddles. Come on, guys. He just wants some cuddles.
Here. I know. But,
you know, Mariner not wearing the outfit was so good. I love this character too.
This poor new guy. I mean,
before the end of the episode, he went 2-3 times. He asked to replicate new pants. I mean, this is a guy. I have a feeling the turnover on the Cerritos is probably pretty high. There's a lot of transfer requests, but this episode was just so much fun. But again, the character growth in this, not only with Mariner, but I think even in Boimler and even what we see with Rutherford. And I love at the end of the episode when he's like, oh yeah, I've turned down. He's trying to do everything for promotion. And you find out he's turned down promotions so many times so he can stay with his friends. And it's like, right. yeah, that actually kind of makes sense. Rutherford should be much further along than
yeah.
what he is. But that was one of my favorite things with this episode. But the other thing is too, guys, was I want to talk about this because Moopsie. I mean, Moopsie steals this episode. I love Moopsie. But I love the fact that they played up the kind of science fiction horror movie aspect of it. We see Moopsie here. We think what is kicking out what we think is the most dangerous creature in the menagerie, but no. And I just love the look of horror on Mariner's face in this shot. It's so classic. And I mean, come on, Haley, we need more Moopsie in future.
Games. Well, it's that concept of just because it's the cutest looking thing doesn't mean it is the sweetest thing. I get mistaken for that a lot. I can be really mean. It also made me think of there's an episode of Phineas and Ferb, and I don't know if you guys have watched Phineas and Ferb, but there's this little character, and he throws on this little mustache, and suddenly he can talk, and his name is Meep. And at first, that's all he says. And then he puts on his little mustache and he's like the spy. But he's in like a menagerie type thing. And again, super cute, really little. You think, oh, so cute, so sweet, you know, but he's like trying to fight, this really bad guy and run away from this bad and like all this stuff. And so I love this concept of just because it's the cutest and looks the cuddliest doesn't mean it is, because looks can be deceiving. And I think that's something, you know, you can see along with Rutherford. You know, we think, oh, you know, of course, out of everybody, I think he deserved promotions for sure. And looks can be deceiving, because you find out, hey, he's turned him down so he can stay with his friends. Mariner, she has the chops, you know, and she acts like she doesn't, because she's afraid of promotion and afraid of responsibility and being that person, but she has it. So looks can be deceiving. And so I think that's kind of neat. Really good theme for this episode, actually.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And of course, Amy too. We also have to make sure we have our proper head dent spot in all of our rooms.
That makes no sense whatsoever. Come on.
Seriously. I do have some more Star Trek trivia for this episode as well. You guys are going to enjoy this, especially you, Amy. The episode opens with Ransom and Shax stretching. The leotards they are wearing are identical to the ones worn by Dr. Crusher and Deanna Troi when they worked out together on Next Generation. The stretches they were doing were also done by Crusher and Troi in the episode The Price, while Troi was telling Crusher about her feelings for a visiting diplomat.
Mm-hmm.
My eyes are burning.
I have a t-shirt with that scene on it, and I love it. I'm like, oh, I saw it and was like, oh, I should have had this wearing it while I was watching it.
When Boimler examines the new dent he left in the ceiling of his bunk, the image of the ceiling is the exact same as the ceiling of his old hallway bunk shown at the beginning of the episode, just mirror flipped. Narge's miraculous menagerie is a spoof of the Star Trek episode whose plot revolves around some type of menagerie. Obviously, we're talking about The Cage, the unaired pilot from 1966 involved the menagerie of aliens collected by the highly telepathic Talosians, who also tried to force Captain Christopher Pike to be part of their exhibit. After Pike was severely injured, his former science officer Spock took Pike back to Talos IV to live out his life there. Star Trek Next Generation also had a few menagerie-like episodes, the first being The Most Toys, where Data is kidnapped by Kivas Bajo, a collector of rare creatures and artifacts who attempts to make Data one of his exhibits. A short time later, Deanna Troi and her mother, Loxana, are kidnapped by a Ferengi named Daemon Tog, who is in love with Loxana and tries to force her and Deanna to be his property in Menage a Troi. Rutherford tells Tende he upgraded the replicators to be 9 femtoseconds faster. A femtosecond is 1/1000th of a picosecond, 1/1000000th of a nanosecond, 1/1000000000th of a microsecond, 1/1000000000th of a millisecond, and 1/4000000000th of a second. By comparison, a femtosecond is a second as a second is to 31,710,000,000 years. Object traveling at the speed of light would cover a distance of 300 nanometers in 1 femtometer second, the diameter of a small bacteria. There's your science for the episode. Haley, I'm going to let you figure all that out in your head later. But that covers the trivia for this episode. But guys, there is one thing we have not talked about, and it's something that is very important that happened in both of these episodes. And I saved this for a particular reason, because earlier on, Mike McMahon talked about how this was going to be the season. There was going to be an overarching plot line that was going to run through all those episodes. And guys, it starts with this mystery ship that we see at the end of episode one and the beginning of episode two. First of all, it visits some friendly Klingons, typical Klingons, takes them out. And then in the greatest portrayal of Romulans ever in Star Trek.
I betray you, but not in that way.
Yeah.
I didn't do it.
Let me get on with this, because I need to get back to scheming.
Yeah, exactly. it takes out a Romulan ship too. Now, the rumors have been that this is going to tie in with all the technological villains Lower Decks has come across in their time, whether it's Peanut Hamper or a few other supercomputers that we will keep nameless because it's dangerous to talk about them. But guys, are you at least intrigued by what might be going on here in Lower Decks? What the heck is going on, and what is wiping out these ships from very famous Star Trek races?
Okay, I don't care why they're being destroyed, but I need to see more of it, because how they are speaking, so stereotypical Klingon, so stereotypical Romulan, like it's wrapping up all of the things that, you know, this monoculture is and showing us in Lower Decks. Like, these are the Lower Deckers of the Klingon. These are the Lower Deckers of the Romulan. And how much fun would it be to be writing those, especially that Romulan one? I'm scheming, I'm conniving. The words absolutely made me laugh. Best part. Absolutely. I want to see more of that. And like, ooh, what other alien races can we just, you know, put in a monoculture, and these are what they are. Like, I really want to see it. But yeah, I don't know what that ship is doing. And it's disabling and like lowering shields. It's very powerful.
Haley, any thoughts on this? Are you intrigued by what they're setting up here?
Yeah, it is interesting to kind of think of Lower Decks, because it has been episodic television, of having this theme running through it of, you know, this menace that's come about. So it is interesting. I completely agree with Amy. I love this concept. You know, we were introduced to it before with the Lower Decks characters from other ships and other races, and which is hilarious to think about, you know, because again, it's not something we've ever seen. We've seen it in TNG, and we've seen it a little in TOS, kind of, sort of, and so we've seen it in some of our other iterations, but we've never really like seen it with other races, of having people who are stuck doing the menial tasks aboard the ship. And so I love that. And these dramatized versions of these races was really fun to see as well. I'm thoroughly intrigued, and I'm trying to sit here, wrap my brain around, like, could this just be like technology that's like formed itself, and something like robotic has put something together? Could this be the almighty powerful Kevin's race? Like, could this be something that we haven't seen yet? Because obviously Lower Decks is huge on throwing us, here's this thing you've seen in Star Trek. Here's this, you know, like, in my opinion, too much. There's too much fan service. So could this be something we just haven't seen yet in Lower Decks to this point? Like, what race could this be? Could they take a race that we've seen in Star Trek before and completely flip it? Maybe like in before iteration, they were like really far behind, and now they've like advanced like really, really far ahead, like faster, farther than anyone else has, because it's like this beam of light that destroys these ships. So I'm really intrigued, and I'm going to think on it, of who this could potentially be.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. It's Lower Decks, so you know they're going to throw their twist on it. But before we close up this particular episode of Union Federation, there is something I want to ask you guys. We are into the fourth season of Lower Decks now. A lot of people didn't think it would last this long. And I think for a lot of people, it's turned a lot of people who had an idea of what Lower Decks was when it first started to where it is now. And I think it's really been embraced by the Trek fans. And I think even more so is how much, especially Tawny Newsome, has become a representative of Star Trek and when it kind of become one of the new faces of Trek. She has been popping up everywhere. She's now going to be a writer on Starfleet Academy. So as we are entering episode four, I want to ask both of you now, four seasons, where do you feel like Lower Decks has really cemented itself now as part of the Star Trek lore and is really something that represents Star Trek in well, and but in its own unique way? Hey, I'm actually going to ask you this first because I know you've not been a huge fan of Lower Decks, more because of just the style of it is not necessarily your thing. But as we've gone through, I have seen where you've enjoyed more episodes as we've gone along than you thought you were going to.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the thing. Like, I enjoy the episodes, and I enjoy some episodes more, or I enjoy certain parts of the episodes. And I'm not one who's going to sit there and be like, oh, it's awful, because unfortunately, it's last on my list of all the Trek that I have watched at this point. But that doesn't mean that I don't enjoy it for what it brings. And I think it really has cemented itself. I think there are definitely fans who, they've loved other iterations of Trek, like they grew up on TNG like me, or they really love Deep Space Nine, but they really love this for what it does for the show in overall. And I think there are probably people who are really loving it, and maybe this is the first time they've ever watched it, simply because, hey, they like the style, they like how this is filmed, they love the animation. And so I think every time they come up with a new concept for a Star Trek show, it just broadens the depth, and it also widens the availability for people to watch it. Because again, there's not everybody's going to love everything. And that's okay, right? As we love to say, love your fandom and don't hate on anybody else's. And so I think it's just allowing for more to be out there for someone to enjoy. Like, they might be like, I'm never going to watch the original series. That's totally fine. Like, you don't have to, you know, but you can get enjoyment out of this. And maybe, you know, I know we've talked about it, some reference, you might be like, well, I want to learn more about that. What is that talking about? And so I think it just allows for more, which is always wonderful.
Amy, I remember you were genuinely surprised how much you ended up liking Lower Decks after watching it, because you weren't quite sure what to expect. And what do you think? Do you think Lower Decks has now cemented itself as a very important part of Star Trek lore?
Yeah, and I think going off with what you were saying, Haley, like looking at the diversity that we have in these shows, like this is truly Star Trek embracing Idic. Because you look back at 90s Berman era Trek, very formulaic, very same note. And now you get Discovery, who's got Michael Burnham. You've got Lower Decks that are basically Boimler, the four. And then you have Strange New Worlds, where you've got, I feel, a very good ensemble show. You know, we've got Prodigy with Gwyn and Dodge. Like, we're getting the diversity, not only in the characters, but in the type of shows, the feeling of it. And it makes us stronger. And really representing Idic in this era is important, because they're not only talking the talk, but they're walking the walk. And so, yeah, as you said, Haley, love your fandom. Don't hate on what others. And yeah, Lower Decks, it sometimes is jarring to me. This is the only cartoon animation that I watch, because it is Star Trek. So, but to have that diversity is bringing it's bringing more fans in. And I think with Lower Decks, it is definitely solidified. When you go to any convention, there are always Lower Deck uniforms. They're beautiful. They're bright. they like remind you of TNG. Like they're there and the actors are coming out full force and doing all the conventions. And like you said, Tawny Newsom and Jack Quaid, they are out there. They're on different like Will Wheaton's Ready Room and stuff. Like they're out there. They're on that Star Trek Day thing that we won't be talking about. But they're getting out there. And so we're seeing their faces. We're not going to lose Lower Decks.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's been fun for me from the start. I love the cast. I love what Jack Quaid and Tawny Newsom have brought to Star Trek. And I think Tawny Newsom, especially, like I said, now she's going to be a writer for Trek for Starfleet Academy. And that's amazing too. But I also want to throw this out there. And I know I've talked about this a little bit before. Jack Quaid is so phenomenal. And if you want to see his range and what he can do, he is doing voice acting work for another very popular animated series right now. He is voicing Clark Kent Superman for the new Cartoon Network show, My Adventures with Superman. And it is phenomenal. So if you want to if you need a little more Jack Quaid fix in your life, it's a fun family show. You can watch it with the family. You can watch it with yourself. But to hear him voicing Superman is kind of a trip. Is kind of a trip in itself because you're used to him doing Boimler, but he's so good at it. And it's just, if you have any question about his range, of course, too, he also does The Boys for those of you who want a little more violence in your life. But yeah, check that out. But I am excited. Lower Decks is here. I'm excited to see what fun we're gonna have with it. This show, every time I'm done watching it, I'm smiling. And that's, to me, that tells me all I need to know about the show is I'm smiling at the end of it. Even if it's not one of the episodes that I thought was the greatest or kind of hit me at 1,000 miles an hour, there's always a time I'm going to laugh at this show. And it's just wonderful. But guys, it is time to get things closed out here. So let's intercept some subspace signals. Okay, guys, first of all, thank you. If you're watching on our YouTube channel, watching the video of this episode, thank you. Give us a like, give us a subscribe, give us a share on the Fandom Podcast Network YouTube channel. Of course, you can also find Union Federation on the Fandom Podcast Network master feed, of course, on all your great podcast catchers out there as well as on the BQN Network and all the wonderful podcast catchers they have out there. You can email us if you would like to at theunionfederation@gmail.com. You can visit our Facebook page. We keep you updated on all the happenings of Star Trek and hopefully some Orville news once the strike is over, maybe something. Seth, there's a lot of people who are really saying we listen to the people during the strike, see if what you can get done. Also, too, you can follow us at UnionFedPod on Twitter/X. I'm Kyle. You can find me on Twitter at AKyleW or on Instagram and Threads at AKyleFandom. Amy, where can people find you and the BQN Network?
Well, you can find us by searching BQN. I specifically am on All Good Things. You can find me on Twitter/X at Miss Amy Nelson. And I'm also in our Facebook group, The Orville. Is that what it's called? Haley.
Yeah. Union Federation.
Yeah, Union Federation. Federation. Yeah.
There's too many things to remember. Yeah, I
know. So there's so many more new social medias now. It's crazy, and I will never call Twitter X. Sorry, but
it's too weird.
It is too weird. Even when I go to hit and it says repost instead of retweet, it feels wrong. But Haley, speaking of all these social medias, where can people find you out there in the ether?
So I'm in our Facebook group and I am leaving Twitter. Vamos. Adios. So the best place to find me will be on Instagram, and it's also at Trekkie01D. Please, however, send me a message and letting me know who you are, because if you just ask to follow me and I don't know who you are, you're not going to get it.
Yeah. True.
Sorry.
Are you, it's not going to happen. Are you considering Blue Sky?
I actually am on Blue Sky. Oh, okay. So you can also find me on Blue Sky as well.
Yeah, I actually just recently joined Blue Sky as well.
Yay! So. Yeah, you can find me there. I am at Trekkie01D on Blue Sky as well. But there I am on the Trek Geeks specific.
Yes, and I must thank our BQN cohort, Mark White, for giving me a code for Blue Sky. So thank you, Mark. But guys, we are going to be covering Lower Decks all season long, but we're going to be doing those episodes two at a time just because it is a shorter episode with that. But unless there's something really drastic that happens, hopefully by probably not the next episode, but the one after that, we'll have Kevin back out of his captured menagerie himself, unless he tries to take it over. And then, you know, whatever happens with the Moopsie, not my fault. We're going to leave it up to him. Do you think he'll have bones left, Haley?
Maybe.
I don't know. But in the meantime, while I still have all of my teeth, especially thank you to my amazing crew, Amy and Haley. You guys are wonderful as always. It's such a pleasure to do these shows with you and talk Trek and talk everything. And I special shout out to Amy. She made a massive sacrifice to be on this podcast as her beloved Utah Utes are playing right now.
I have muted everything. I am gonna I've recorded it, so I just need to not be spoiled.
So with that, guys, thank you so much. We'll be back in 2 weeks with the next two episodes of Lower Decks. Until then, hailing frequencies are now closed.